It's 7:35 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown. Water is slowly being restored to the 300,000 West Virginians in the Kanawha Valley affected by last week's chemical leak. Teams of chemists and water quality specialists are collecting and testing dozens of samples before the water can be deemed safe in all areas. But as Ashton Mara reports, in the Senate, lawmakers are beginning to talk about legislation to prevent future threats to public health and the environment.
Lawmakers are already asking themselves what they can do to prevent an incident like this from occurring in the future. In the Senate, Majority Leader Senator John Unger chairs the Joint Legislative Oversight Commission on State Water Resources. He is looking into the commission's power to investigate the incident and propose regulations for the industry. Senator Ron Stallings says environmental regulations will be key going forward, but as chair of the Senate Committee on Health and Human Resources, he wants to investigate the health effects as well.
This chemical, this methanol chemical, is something that we didn't know much about. We need to learn more about the molecule itself and work with the federal people, the CDC, to try to find out more about it in general. You know, do we really need to be concerned? Is this just something that could cause a little skin irritation?
West Virginia American Water President Jeff McIntyre says the raw water going into the Charleston treatment facility and the treated water coming out were both testing at 0 parts per million. That means no chemical is being detected at the plant itself. But in other areas where test results haven't reached that number yet, Stallings says the public will have to trust that the Centers for Disease Control and the county health departments know what level is safe for use and consumption.
But at the same time, last night I was having dinner in a restaurant and I asked him if it was tap water or bottled water, and I wanted bottled water. That's just me. But again, I think from the topical, the washing and things like that, I feel much more reassured. Again, I'm not a public health doctor, so I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes, but I think Dr. Tierney, the Bureau of Public Health, I think she's looking deeply into this. She's very concerned, as is everyone.
Department of Environmental Protection Secretary Randy Huffman said at press conferences over the weekend, the chemical should have no impact on animal life and no fish kill had been reported. Stallings says knowing how it affects animals can give some insight into the effects on humans as well.
We don't know even the long-term or short-term effects of animals. I'm glad that there's no acute toxicity, but I think these are things we have to look at. We have to study. We have to look at this chemical and frankly, other chemicals that might be out there. If this is not a wake-up call, I don't know what is.
He is working with the Bureau for Public Health in Charleston and the School of Public Health in Morgantown to look into legislation or possible regulations on the chemical industry and its effects on public health. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara. In Charleston.
The House is back on its normal schedule after delaying its start due to the chemical leak in Charleston. The House Committee on Veterans Affairs and Homeland Security looked at legislation to require county courthouses and other government buildings to fly the POW/MIA flag. As Aaron Payne reports, some House committees just held their first meeting yesterday.
The House Committee on Banking and Insurance also met to hear presentations from state agency heads. Commissioner of Insurance Michael Riley was asked many questions by committee members, including Delegate Cindy Fritch, about topics ranging from workers' comp to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act.
Has your role changed in overseeing and regulating health insurance now that the Affordable Care Act is being implemented?
It has. Obviously, this federal intervention was a landmark and a land shift in how the health insurance industry is regulated. We continue to regulate the carriers right here. But the federal law and the ACA certainly has introduced a whole lot of new standards there. Our mission and objective is obviously to work closely with the federal government to understand what those rules are so that we can communicate those to our citizens and they can make good, sound decisions.
Commissioner of the Division of Financial Institutions, Sally Klein's presentation was on the improvement of the economic outlook of banking since the recession. She also said there is a need to focus less on the competition between U.S. and European Union banks, and more on helping community banks in the wake of the federal legislation, the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, nicknamed the Dodd-Frank Act.
One of the things that Dodd-Frank did was create the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is charged with the examination for consumer protection of those banks greater than $50 billion, but it also has rulemaking authority to write new rules and regulations as it relates to consumer protection, and those rules have a direct impact on community banks.
The committee will now move forward and, as Chairman Cliff Moore says, attempt to do what they feel is best for the banking and insurance industries in West Virginia.
I think the Committee on Banking and Insurance, their main focus is to make sure that we have correct consumer protection policies and laws in place. We want to make sure the industry functions appropriately. We want to make sure that we're not doing anything to bog the system down. And so our committee functions sort of on the premise that if a bill isn't good for the industry, if it isn't good for the consumers, we don't run it. We don't clog the system up just for the sake of saying, we ran 50 bills through the committee. We want to make sure we're passing good public policy and enacting good legislation.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
You're listening to West Virginia Morning. It's 7:41.
There'll be increasing clouds today, snow showers tonight, and into Saturday with as much as 1 inch of accumulation possible throughout tomorrow. Daytime highs in the 20s and 30s today and tomorrow, into the teens and 20s over the weekend, but milder on Martin Luther King Jr.'s holiday. The following county school systems are closed today. They include Boone, Kanawha, and Putnam counties. Also, the Hamlin Pre-K to 8 school and Lincoln County High School in Lincoln County are both closed as well. Monroe County schools are operating on a 2-hour delay, and Seneca Trail Christian Academy in Greenbrier County is also operating on a 2-hour delay today. Support provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit WVDRS.org for employer services.
Pregnant women in areas affected by last week's chemical spill are being advised only to drink bottled water. As Dave Mistich reports, the advisory comes on the heels of a letter from the CDC to state officials, and some women had already sought the advice of their doctor.
32-year-old Sarah Griffith is 5 months pregnant and lives and works in Charleston. Griffith's doctor advised her not to drink water from the tap for the duration of her pregnancy.
She also said that I could shower in it, but try not to get my face too wet to wash any sort of spotty parts that have membranes in them, like my nose and my eyes and my mouth, with bottled water.
The CDC reaffirmed previous advice to West Virginia officials that they do not anticipate adverse health effects from the contaminant below levels of one part per million. State officials, in conjunction with the CDC, have also released a FAQ sheet for pregnant women who might have consumed the contaminated water. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Dave Mistich in Charleston.
There's an ongoing debate over whether funding will be able to continue for the Green Bank Telescope in Pocahontas County. But the telescope is still making remarkable astronomical discoveries, including one that's being called a puzzle by West Virginia University astronomers. There is a very unique star formation in the Milky Way galaxy that until recently was never discovered. It's known as a triple star system, two white dwarf stars and a pulsar. A pulsar is a star that gives off radio waves. White dwarf stars are very dense, some as massive as our sun, and they have stored thermal energy. This particular grouping is somewhat rare, according to West Virginia University physics professor Duncan Lorimer.
It's something of a mystery as to how it's formed. We're quite used to the idea now, and we're comfortable with the observations of pulsars being the end products of supernova explosions, the end states of massive stars. We're comfortable with the idea of those objects being isolated and moving around the Milky Way and other stellar systems. But this triple stellar system, where you have two white dwarf stars, is something of a puzzle as to its origin, how it got there. It's the orbits are very organized and They're all essentially in the same plane. And so there's a very special set of circumstances must have occurred to produce this system. Probably very, very rare.
But Lorimer says there are clues to help researchers track the system's origin.
The way we think about this is the pulsar is essentially a clock in space. And it's sending out these regular pulses that we receive with the Green Bank telescope and other telescopes. We can use it to monitor its position in the orbit and hence determine to very high precision many, many orbital parameters. We're able to measure the mass of the pulsar. So it's really a one-of-a-kind system.
The significance of this discovery is that it's allowing researchers to test a scientific principle known as the strong equivalence principle. Lorimer explains.
That is to say that bodies fall in a gravitational field in a way that's independent of their chemical composition or internal composition. And that's been done many times over the years. On the moon, there's a very famous movie where the astronaut drops a feather and a hammer, I believe it is, and that you can see that they fall at the same rate in the absence of drag. And here we have a pulsar and a white dwarf being pulled by another white dwarf, essentially. And so we can watch them fall in that gravitational field independently. And now we're testing this principle on objects that are very much more exotic.
This system was discovered by a former West Virginia University student who is now a faculty member at Western Kentucky University. The tool used to make this important discovery is the Green Bank Telescope. Funding for the telescope is in doubt due to the nation's financial struggles. Lorimer says the telescope is a vital tool in how astronomers are able to look at the universe. He fears without it, more important discoveries like this one can't be made.
This is not by no means the only example of what the GBT has done over the last few years, just for pulsar science alone. And it has a whole slew of other very interesting scientific questions that it's answering in a unique way. So, yes, I'm very concerned that the future of the telescope is uncertain. The telescope is potentially getting cut off well before its time.
Karen O'Neill is the site director at Green Bank. She says the facility is an open skies facility, which means any astronomer from around the world can apply for time to get on the telescope. She says when astronomers make discoveries with the telescope, there's a little bit of luck involved, but mostly it's hard work. And the telescope itself, which is the largest fully steerable telescope in the world, certainly helps.
Could this discovery have been made without the GBT? Possibly. But did the GBT make this discovery vastly more likely? Absolutely.
O'Neill says this particular discovery was made while astronomers were looking for related systems, but they certainly didn't expect to find this particular one. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. Our director is Bob Powell. From Morgantown, I'm Ben Aduccio. Good morning.